We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hi everyone, welcome to the In Conversation podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I am Tanat Swachkaura, a second year PhD student at the University of Cambridge and an ACAM Early Career Branch member. In today's episode, I have the privilege to talk to Dr. Jibril Abdulmalik from ACIDO Foundation. ACIDO Foundation received the Innovative Research Training or Practice in Low and Middle Income Countries Award and the 2024 ACAM Awards. The ACIDO Foundation is a nonprofit mental health advocacy organization that aims to promote better understanding around mental health in Nigeria and across the African continent. The foundation envisions a Nigerian society in which everyone achieves optimal mental health, regardless of age, gender, socioeconomic status, religious creed, or ethnicity. Today, we are joined by Dr. Jibril Abdulmalik, who is the founder and CEO of ACIDO Foundation. He is an experienced psychiatrist and senior lecturer with a demonstrated history of public mental health advocacy, research, and engagement with the government at all levels, as well as NGOs working in the field of mental health. In our conversation, we're going to unpack how the foundation came about, the inspirational work they're doing in Nigeria, and how that work sits within the global mental health landscape. Welcome, Dr. Jibril. Firstly, I'd like to say congratulations for your award and the recent ACAM Awards. Your work is really, really inspiring. It hits home for me because I'm from an African country. I'm Zimbabwean, and I truly understand the struggles of ensuring that mental health is a priority, not only in our communities, but also for the government. So to get us started, please may you introduce yourself and the amazing work you're doing with your foundation to the audience.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you to ACAM for the excellent work that ACAM is also doing. We were very pleasantly surprised when we had the nomination and then was given the award. So thank you so much. Now, I'm Jibril Abdulmalik. I work in Nigeria. I'm a Nigerian, and I work in the mental health space. And the ACIDO Foundation is a not-for-profit organization that aims to promote mental health awareness in our society, to ensure that there is empathy, that people have the right information about where they should go for help when they need it, as well as to push back against lots of ignorance in the society, lots of shame and stigma, which then leads to discrimination. And so a lot of suffering goes on for affected individuals and their families. And we at the ACIDO Foundation feel that we shouldn't just fold our arms and watch while so many individuals and their families suffer when they can actually access help and get better, especially when they are vulnerable. Vulnerable such as children. I mean, there are so many cases of children taken out of school because they have autism or they have ADHD condition, and or even epilepsy. And the other parents, because there are misconceptions that, epilepsy can be contagious. If the child is fitting and the saliva of the child touches another child, that child may also develop epilepsy. All sorts of myths and misconceptions. So because of complaints from other children and other parents, the school will then advise the parents to keep the child at home. So that child will not have the benefit of an education. Or a female who is married and after pregnancy and delivery has postpartum depression, and the husband, in his ignorance, and their family say, I don't know what has come over you since you put to bed. You become lazy. You're not looking after yourself. You're not doing anything in the house. You even to take care of the baby is a struggle. What's wrong with you? Remember that even the lady herself is not aware of the fact that she's depressed. She just feels tired all the time, has low mood, and so on. And if care is not taken, the marriage can break down or cause a lot of stress in the marriage. So all of these challenges are the reasons why the ACIDO Foundation try to promote mental health awareness in the society so that everybody, children, adults, the elderly, can actualize their full potentials and benefit from available treatment without shame, without stigma, without discrimination.
Thank you so much for saying that. That's really, really amazing. I know I said it earlier and I may say it a lot today, but your work is really, really inspiring and it will definitely go a very, very long way. And I'm sure it's already doing that. So, coming from an African background, I know that mental health careers are not usually the obvious path. And you did medicine, and I'm sure everyone expected, or maybe most would have expected you to take other paths or specialize in other areas. And mental health careers are not what people expect you to do, although that's slowly changing. And like you spoke about, there's so much stigma that's there. So, can you please tell us how you actually found your passion in psychiatry and if there were any challenges in doing so?
Let me start by saying that you're absolutely spot on. As a medical student, as an undergraduate, I enjoyed psychiatry as a posting, but I never envisioned myself in that field as a psychiatrist, not for any reason particularly, but just because, we spend a short period of time in psychiatry compared to the other departments such as pediatrics, gynecology, and all of that. So it was just a small component. But I thoroughly enjoyed it because I like listening to the human stories, human angle stories, the challenges, and being able to help them get better. So I enjoyed it. But I've always wanted to specialize in pediatrics, to look after children. And, children, once they are ill and you intervene, the recovery is so dramatic. A child that is so weak, you just rehydrate the child, and the next hour or two, the child is up and about and playing. But after my period of internship, after graduation, you do an internship under observation for 1 year before you are licensed to practice fully as a doctor. And then in Nigeria, we also have a compulsory 1 year national service. So you are posted to the other parts of the country apart from your region of origin, just to promote national unity and, experience. And then you are serving the nation with your expertise before you then join the labor market or decide to travel abroad and all. So I was posted to the extreme northeast of Nigeria, Borno State. And in that state, I was then posted to a specialist neuropsychiatric hospital. So the entire work I did every day was attending to patients with mental health difficulties. And that hospital was serving six neighboring states, a population of about 30 million people, only one hospital. And because it was a border city, the state borders Chad Republic, Niger, as well as parts of Cameroon. So communities in those three countries that are closer to Maiduguri, where the hospital is located, also bring their patients there. So every day we see tons and tons of patients. And I was taken aback. Where are all these people coming from? How come there are so many people struggling with mental health challenges? And some of the time they will have been ill for a very long time before they eventually decided to come to hospital. So I was struck by the magnitude of the burden and the fact that there are very few mental health professionals in Nigeria and across Africa, really. And that was when I began to change my orientation from specializing in pediatrics. And maybe I should specialize here. I think my services are needed more here. And of course, it's challenging because, as you had mentioned rightly, it's not prestigious to be called a psychiatrist. Some people say, oh, psychiatrists behave like their own patients too. And so it's not glamorous. To say that you're a surgeon is more prestigious. To say you're a gynecologist is more prestigious and all of that. And then it's also not seen as financially lucrative. That if you're a surgeon, you can have a private practice. If you're a gynecologist, you can make a lot of money. But a psychiatrist, it's seen like it's not glamorous and all. And then my wife, who was my fiance then, she's also a doctor. When I told her I'm no longer interested in specializing in pediatrics, I'm now thinking of psychiatry, she was worried on my behalf because of the societal stigma that may come with that career choice. What I mean, she came around very quickly and she's been very supportive over time. So those were some of the challenges and my evolution to decide to specialize in psychiatry.
Thank you so much. I did psychology for my undergrad and I faced similar, call it backlash, because some of the things that were said were very unwarranted. But I think when you do have that passion and you know you can serve in a certain discipline, it's very important to see it through. And now you're flourishing in it, which is really, really amazing. So, learning in Zimbabwe and being Zimbabwean myself, something that has struck me coming to do my postgrad in the UK is how mental health is perceived, both by community members as well as the government. And I know that we are from different parts of Africa, but in doing my readings, there are some similarities in how mental health itself is prioritized. And I just want to hear your thoughts on what you think we need to do better. Obviously, we have backlash from people when people decide to pursue careers in mental health. And chances are also high. These are the people that will become our policymakers, that will get into politics. These are the people that we will interact with, that we will want to lobby things to so that they can make a difference in our system. So, how do you think we can shift those perspectives? And I know you're already doing that with your foundation, but it would be really great to just hear what you think we can do, not just as individual countries, but actually as a continent.
Now, this is so very important that the biggest barriers are ignorance, shame, stigma, and discrimination. And the best way to dispel these barriers is to provide information, create awareness, sustained advocacy. And that's the work of the Asido Foundation. Awareness creation, advocacy. For instance, in Nigeria, attempted suicide remains a crime punishable by 1 year imprisonment. That's ridiculous because we know that 80 to 90% of those who will think of suicide will have background mental illness, especially depression. So what they need is treatment, is support, encouragement, not arrest and imprisonment. Part of our advocacy last year in May 2024, we were able to pay a courtesy visit to the Attorney General of the Federation in Nigeria and to make a strong case that we think this law needs to be changed. And he assured us of his support. And we are working with other bodies, other coalition of NGOs to push for the decriminalization of attempted suicide in Nigeria. We also have an international partner, Lifeline International, which does a lot of work for suicide prevention, and Asido partners with them. So we're working assiduously. So reforms, advocacy, awareness creation works at the population level so that we begin to change the mindset. But we have to also be aware that this is a marathon. It's not going to change overnight. But gradually, we can move the eye of the needle, no matter how slightly, but positively in the right direction. And so if we are able to do so gradually over time, the situation 10 years from now should be much better than where we are today. So once we have that idea that we are in it for the long haul, everything is not going to change in the blink of an eye. And we have similar problems across the entire continent and even other low and middle income countries across Asia too. The challenges are similar, and we all have to work hard, put pressure on our government representatives, our lawmakers, so that they begin to prioritize mental health. Across Africa, the attention is mainly for infectious diseases, malaria, HIV, reproductive health issues, and so on. But non-communicable diseases such as mental illness, which is like a silent epidemic, is not given any attention. So we have to bring this to the front burner and make it undeniable so that they can't continue to hide away from it, to make the decisions to support, fund, and ensure that mental health gets the right attention that it deserves.
Thank you for that. I love that you said you should not expect things to just change overnight. I see it sometimes when people get into the mental health space, they start doing advocacy work and they get tired because they're like, "Where are the results?" And I'm like, "The results may not come soon, but what's matter is doing the
Absolutely.
groundwork." And in your answer, you spoke about support, and I think that's a very important area to think about, especially when we are thinking of the personalization of mental health support. I find that this area is not straightforward in non-Western countries. Firstly, there are a lot of misconceptions surrounding how mental health is perceived, particularly within the African context. And I think something that's important is for people to know that there's no monolithic view of African countries and our practices. We are all very diverse. Yes, we all come from the same continent, but like we always say, Africa is not a country. I've seen that there's a really big need for the decolonization of mental health in African spaces. So I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on how we can contextualize mental health in Nigeria. How do you think you can really make mental health a conversation for Nigerian people, thinking about your own perspectives and your own practices as well?
So it's really very important that we do not forget our cultural roots and history and tradition. And we need to find a middle ground of taking what is positive and beneficial from medical science, from Western developments, and also merging that with what is beneficial and culturally acceptable in our traditions, and that is beneficial. For instance, we have a culture where a woman puts to bed and all the female members of the family come around for the next couple of days, ensure that she doesn't cook, she doesn't do anything. There's a lot of social support network. Of course, the flip side of that is that you lose a bit of privacy if you just want me time. You won't get that, right? If so many people are in the house. So we have this extended family network that gives a robust social support structure network that is there for you. Many cousins, nieces, people that you grew up with in the neighborhood. We say it takes a village to raise a child, right? And so that communal sense of living, you would also, for instance, find that elderly individuals who are maybe having problems with dementia, we'll have relatives living with them in the house, helping with the household issues and so on, so that they are not alone in their old age. These are positive things in our culture, in our tradition that we shouldn't completely disregard. And we also have to look at beneficial aspects. For instance, when people say, oh, I'm going to see a traditional healer, culturally, that is much more acceptable than going to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And we have to look at how can we leverage on that cultural acceptance that they have while we are eliminating harmful practices such as chaining, such as physical beating. Those are things that are harmful and detrimental, and we want to take those out. But how can we partner and work with them? Because when they go there and they tell them, if you do this, if you take this herb, you'll get better, it has a lot of psychological, whether it's placebo effect or not, has a lot of psychological reassurance, and they come back feeling much better. So we need to be able to work with them. We shouldn't be on our high horse and say, oh, I'm the psychiatrist, I'm the clinical psychologist, and I'm not going to deal with you because you are not educated, right? And so we have to come off that high horse. We have to be humble. We have to partner and collaborate with traditional and faith-based healers, you know, in an evidence-based manner where there is mutual respect so that we can ensure that more people who are suffering get the help they need, devoid of the harmful aspects. We have to be pragmatic. We have to be humble, and we have to reach across the aisle for partnerships and collaboration that ensures that more people have access to quality care that is culturally acceptable to them and that is beneficial to them. That's my take.
That is very interesting, and it's really nice to hear your perspective and how you also do things in Nigeria. I once had a conversation with someone a few years ago. We were talking about mental health. He's older than me, and he said to me, Tanatso, the problem with your generation is that when you bring conversations around mental health to us, you're making it seem like we never understood the concept of mental health from way back. You make it seem like it's something you have suddenly found out and discovered, and it's something new that you're coming to us with. But the difference is, we had our own way of understanding things back then. We had our own way of having these conversations, and we had our own way of things in place. And he spoke about how he appreciates that things are now different and that our generations are now different. But for us to be able to cover some of those intergenerational gaps, and for us to be able to really break down some of these different types of stigma within our communities, we need to have conversations with everyone, and that also includes respecting people's cultures and people's way of living. So, just thinking about some of those cross-cultural differences, even within our own respective communities, how do you think that has influenced Acedo Foundation's work. Do you think that has been a barrier? Because I'd like to believe you've got the youngsters that are coming in with their TikTok and they're saying, oh, let's do this. Let's raise mental health awareness in this way. And I mean, it's great. It's lovely. I see it. I enjoy it. But I'm sure you have people that are coming in with a more different perspective on how to raise awareness. Yet you also have people that still appreciate the traditional way of doing things and collaborating with traditional healers and other groups that have been part of Nigeria's culture, for example. So, do you think you've had any barriers in trying to explore those different areas and reach those different groups?
Yes, I wish I could say that we've not experienced barriers, but the reality, unfortunately, is that there are lots of barriers and challenges in this regard. And the most important is the widespread superstitious beliefs about the etiology of mental health challenges, right? Where people believe that it's a spiritual affliction. And so, if it's a spiritual affliction, only a spiritual intervention can help. And so you're wasting your time if you go to talk to a therapist or see a psychiatrist. You're wasting your time. What it needs is spiritual deliverance. And so they seek for spiritual solution. Now, a flip side of that is that places where they go are places that are unlicensed, where they are more likely to experience human rights abuses and be chained, be beaten, or be asked to do a 7 days dry fast, meaning they only take liquids, no food for 7 days to sort of exorcise the demons or the evil spirits that have possessed them. And so apart from these abusive practices, what this also does is that it drives people underground. So if my family member or my mother or my sister or my wife is having a mental illness, I believe that it's a spiritual problem. It's a devil that has afflicted my wife. I don't want everybody to know that we have a spiritual problem at home. So I lock her indoors, okay, so that she's hidden away. Or I have a child with autism and I believe it's an evil spirit that has possessed my child. That child will not step out of the house. Or I will send a child to the village to stay with my grandmother, locked away from view, and of course, deprived of education, which is not helpful. Now, the other aspects of these superstitious beliefs is that it also makes people to stay away, that if you go and get involved or you try and help the person, that spirit may also afflict you. Do you get what I mean? So because of that, if you say, oh, you don't know what the person did to deserve this spiritual problem that has made them lose their sanity, so don't get involved. So because of that, empathy and help supporting that culture of wanting to support someone, also many people withdraw because of this perception. And I had also mentioned the legal challenge too about the fact that attempted suicide remains criminalized. And until last year, we had an old mental health law called the Lunacy Law of 1958, which we inherited from the British. And we had never revised until last year, when we also did a lot of advocacy around that, because even the name Lunacy Law, even the name makes you cringe, right? And in that old law, anybody with mental health challenge has no right to own property. And so many other outrageous things there. So those were, but thankfully, we now have a Mental Health Act of 2021, which was signed into law 2023. And thankfully, this is in tandem with global best practice and protects and promotes the fundamental human rights of affected persons. And we also have a lot of members in the community who are not crazy about digital, online, social media, mental health advocacy and awareness. So we still marry the traditional advocacy approaches. We go to markets, we go to communities, we meet elders, we give talks, we listen to them. And so we're also trying to partner with religious clergy and to train them and talk to them so that they can use their very important platform, the pulpit, to encourage people that mental illness is a medical disorder. You should seek medical intervention. Don't rely only on prayers. We're not even saying don't pray. So we try to find a middle. What we do in Nigeria is, at the Acedo Foundation, is we are pragmatic. We say, please, by all means, you believe in God, you believe God can do it, please, by all means, pray. But in addition to prayer, seek medical treatment, right? The medical treatment does not negate the impact of your prayer. Let them work together. So take the treatment, go for therapy sessions, and support all of that with prayers. That is going to work better. So that's a way we sort of navigate that balance where people say, but don't you think there is a spiritual component? We say, well, you know, if that's your belief, please pray. But in addition to the prayers, do this so that you can get the best out of it. So those are some of the challenges and our efforts to try and find a middle ground to navigate them in a way that is acceptable to the community.
That's really lovely. You're doing really great work with your government in Nigeria. It's really amazing to hear that and really inspiring. And it also gives hope that when you put the work in, you will see the results. So it's really great that you managed to do something like that. I have a question pertaining the use of language. In Zimbabwe, we've got 16 official languages, and English is one of them. And I've realized whenever I want to say depression in the other local languages, I struggle. If I want to say, I don't even know what anxiety is, like a direct translation. I can try to use many words to piece it together for someone to understand me, but it's so difficult to just say, oh, you know, you have anxiety. Like, it's so hard to try and do that in some of our local languages. So I'm interested in knowing how you have managed, especially in your work as a psychiatrist as well, how you have managed to translate some of these mental health terms into the local languages, because I believe it's very key when we're talking about that personalization of support and also destigmatizing and also people understanding that, oh, this issue is not just an, in quotes, Western thing as people assume that it is, but it's a life thing. It's a human thing and we all need support. So how have you navigated the issue of language?
Thank you so much. So I will say that compared to Zimbabwe, where you have 16 official languages, we have one official language. And guess what? That official language is English. But we have over 256 different ethnic groups with their different distinct languages. Three big large ones, the Igbo, the Yoruba, and the Hausas. But there are so many different languages that it's a nightmare, right? But what we do, what the only pragmatic thing to do is what you suggested. Most of the time, there is no direct word-for-word exact exchange or translation of this concept. So what we tend to do is to then use descriptive terms involving several words, a phrase, an explanation to say, if you feel this way and that way and so on, this is what it is going on. And so, and then they can relate, because once you start talking about the symptoms or using the symptoms to describe, then people can identify and relate with those. But if you say, oh, it's anxiety, say, what is that? You know, and then you struggle to find a word to translate directly into the local language. But if you describe, use a descriptive approach. So that's what we have adopted. And that's what we use in our both clinical work as well as in our research work, to use descriptive terminologies to explain the concept. And then it is easier and better understood that way.
Now, the idea of descriptive words is really great because people also feel comfortable to open up. They don't feel pressured to understand what a scientific term is. They don't feel pressured to know the right thing or the wrong thing. And there's no barrier for people to be comfortable to just say, this is how I'm feeling. I'm feeling sad today, and I've been feeling sad for the past 7 days. I want help. So that's a really great approach that you're taking. Looking into the future, what does the future look like for Acedo Foundation? I saw on your website, you don't just want to make a difference in Nigeria, but you also want to do it across the African continent. Do you have any other partners within the continent that you work with? Are you also working with any people in Southern Africa? This is me putting in my CV to say we can work together in Zimbabwe. But what does the future look like? And have you started expanding?
Now, we have a big challenge. The challenge is that Nigeria is so large and huge. It's over 200 million population. And mental health receives scant attention. We also have not been, we are still struggling with funding and getting grants and all of that. So even covering Nigeria effectively is still a very tall order for us. But we have, because most of the time we do meetings online, we have people join from across Africa, from Ghana, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Kenya, South Africa, Zimbabwe, you know. So we have plans to expand, because we're not going to wait until we say, oh, Nigeria is perfect before we expand to other countries. We believe that we have a good model, which is the right admixture of people with mental health expertise, as well as those who are just committed individuals who are not even health workers or any such thing, but they're just passionate about mental health promotion. So that balance, that combination of having the right expertise, and one of our core values at the ASIDO Foundation is scientific evidence. That everything we do is underpinned by the right scientific evidence, so that we don't just wake up and say, oh, we are doing this tomorrow without looking at, does the evidence support that it's going to work? Is it going to have achievement? So scientific evidence. So we think that model of having a combination of expertise plus passion working together is a good model to replicate. And down the line, we will be very delighted to have, once we have a core group of individuals, up to 10 individuals in a particular country who are ready to work together, we already have a template and a model that we are operating. So it's very easy to share and get, have a country office in Zimbabwe, for instance. When you finish your PhD, if you return to Zimbabwe, we'll be happy to have you as a country director for ASIDO Foundation Zimbabwe, in Ghana, and other in Kenya and other countries like that, so that we can all carry on this work of promoting mental health and helping our citizens, children, adults, senior citizens, everyone achieve optimal mental health. That's our goal, that every citizen is able to achieve the best state of emotional wellness they can, and that they receive care when they are struggling without any barriers, without any restrictions, without shame, without stigma or discrimination. Because we, lastly, we should remember that health, as defined by the World Health Organization, is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being. So we cannot claim to have a healthy citizenry if we are focusing only on physical health while neglecting mental and social well-being. So our goal ultimately is to have all of the African continent, all African citizens enjoy good health, including and especially good mental health. Thank you.
Amazing. That is a great note to end on. Thank you so much, Dr. Jibril, for sharing your inspirational work with us. There are so many young Africans with passion for mental health work and the dreams to make a difference in their own individual spaces. What these young people need are mentors and people to look up to, and those people are people like you. So we're very fortunate to have people like you in these spaces and pushing this work forward. So we really appreciate the time you have taken to share your journey with us. For more details on the ASIDO Foundation's work, please visit the ACAM website. That is www.acam.org. Also, make sure to take a look at the foundation's website and social media. ACAM is spelled ACAMH.